Do the trashy pulp novels of the world have anything to offer? Are bestsellers all they're cracked up to be? Here at Terrible Book Club, we explore whether you really can judge a book by its cover or its ridiculous synopsis. You ever passed a book and thought, ugh, who's reading this? We probably are.
Welcome to episode 188 of the Terrible Book Club. I'm Paris, and this is Chris.
Hello!
This time, we bring you a two-part episode about childhood nostalgia. We decided to return to what we were reading as kids to see if any of it has held up over the years. Chris remembered reading the entire Hardy Boys series as a child, and Paris, me, I recall... And I recalled my love of the Dear America series of books. So we presented each other with lists of our beloved childhood series, and we each picked what we thought could probably be the worst one from each list. So I chose Hardy Boys 55, The Witchmaster's Key by Franklin W. Dixon. Chris chose Dear America, Down the Rabbit Hole, The Diary of Pringle Rose by Susan Campbell Bartoletti. And today is the second time you should have heard that. So hello, welcome to part two. We are going to be discussing my beloved childhood book series today, which is Dear America. Chris chose Down the Rabbit Hole, The Diary of Pringle Rose by Susan Campbell Bartoletti. All right, Chris, what do we do here at Terrible Book Club?
If this is your first time listening to us, what we do here at the Terrible Book Club is read books that we assume will be bad based on their cover, title, summary, or some combination of the three. Sometimes we read books that our patrons, listeners, or friends, or just us to each other, recommend. So we do the opposite of what most people do in a bookstore or while they're browsing the internet. Usually this experiment results in a disappointing read, but once in a while we end up liking the book. Today's show, including our usual barnyard language, has some brief discussion of the representation of neurodivergent characters. Okay, I will also read the back of the book summary
but it's not bad.
In the spring of 1871, 14-year-old Pringle Rose learns that her parents have been killed in a terrible carriage accident. After her uncle Edward and his awful wife Adeline move into the Pringle family's home, making life for her and her younger brother Gideon unbearable, Pringle runs away with Gideon to Chicago, seeking refuge from the tragedy and hoping to start a new life. She becomes a nanny for the children of a labor activist and quickly finds herself caught up in a web of intrigue and lies. Then, when a familiar figure from home arrives, Pringle begins to piece together the devastating mystery of what happened to her parents and realizes just how deadly the truth might be. But soon, one of the greatest disasters this country has ever known, the Great Fire of Chicago, flares up and Pringle is on the run for her life. She doesn't want to be an extra toasty Pringle.
Is the Great Chicago Fire, like, trademarked? They said the Great Fire of... It's always known as the Great Chicago Fire, not the Great Fire of Chicago.
Well, now you're being nitpicky, I think.
I am, and I have every right to be. This is my childhood nostalgia.
Okay, that's right. Well, we already ruined mine last time, so hopefully yours is more well-preserved.
Honestly, that summary is kind of fucked up, and that isn't the only part that's weird. Did you notice that the summary also said the Pringle family's home, as though that Pringle was their last name?
Yeah, it's her nickname. And yeah, we're going to be making a lot of Chip jokes here today in case... Don't worry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jokes about the fact that the main character's name is Pringle.
Yes. I don't know. That's a weird summary, but thank you for reading it. I can go ahead and give our characters and setting and then read the summary that you wrote, Chris. So, all right. Yeah, like we just said, our main girl today is Pringle. Her given name is Priscilla Duncan Rose.
I don't know how you get there.
You know,
how do you go from Priscilla to Pringle,
I don't
man?
Know. I don't know either. It's very curious. And I asked a couple people I knew. I guess we asked a couple people we know.
Who are Pringle experts?
I asked my local chip expert. No, I asked some people I knew who are into Victorian stuff. Like, have you ever heard Pringle as a diminutive for Priscilla? And they were like, the fuck? No. And I was like, okay. And I don't know, unsure about the veracity of that. It's a very strange diminutive. We've got Pringle's younger brother, Gideon. We have their aunt, Adeline, and Uncle Edward, as well as their cousin, Ellen. Rabbit, who is a hot fuck boy with a facial scar. That is his character. The Pritchard family, Gwen, Peter, and I forget all the kids.
Adam, Lucy, and Sally.
Lucy, Sally. Yes, thank you. Those are all the main ones. And our settings are Scranton, Pennsylvania. Good old Scranton. And then Chicago, Illinois. And we are in the year 1871. All right. I'm going to go ahead and read you the summary that Chris wrote. And this is just a basic plot summary to help you listeners keep on top of some of the main plot points without having to actually read this, largely because many of the books we read are just monstrous things we wouldn't wish upon you. But secondly, so you understand when we start screaming or even complimenting a book what we're talking about. Pringle Rose is the daughter of a mine owner in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He and his wife are killed in a stagecoach accident, while Priscilla's younger brother, Gideon, who is also in the stagecoach, survives. Pringle is devastated, and it only gets worse when Uncle Edward and Aunt Adeline move in. Adeline is abusive towards Pringle and Gideon, and even her own daughter, Ellen. Pringle resolves to run away with Gideon, who has become mute after the trauma of the accident. They board a train to Chicago with their cat in order to go meet a friend of their mother's, who sent a sympathetic letter to them after she heard of the tragedy. Although the letter does not offer housing, Pringle resolves that this is their best option at a better life. Before they left, Pringle had a brief dalliance with a young mine worker whose name she didn't know. She only knew that he also read Alice in Wonderland and got all of her references to it and made witty remarks back to her about it. So she knew him as the rabbit to her Alice. On the trains to Chicago, Pringle and Gideon interact with the Pritchard family and soon befriend them. Gwen Pritchard is traveling back to Chicago with her children, Adam, Lucy, and Sally. Gideon comes out of his shell more due to his companionship with Adam. Pringle continues to process her parents' death, her caretaker role for Gideon, and their new life in Chicago. Once in Chicago, Gwen and company meet up with her husband, Peter Pritchard. Pringle and Gideon head off to their mother's friend's house, only to find she has been involuntarily committed, potentially for being gay or at the very least for being an unusual woman who didn't want to get married. So they head to the Pritchard's residence and are luckily taken in by them. Peter owns a local labor rights advocating newspaper, something Pringle has trouble coming around to since her parents' capitalist influence was so strong. However, Peter's good nature and the fact that he gives Gideon a job that seems to give him some purpose begins to make Pringle see the other side of the labor dispute. In the background, there's fires happening all over Chicago since it's made of wood and it's real hot and dry outside. Brief aside. This is real. Chicago really was just fucking wood everywhere and it was too hot and dry. There were constant fires. Shocking. Anyway, Gideon and Adam... They're in love with this. They love the fires. They often run off to see the fire trucks and like watch the fires get put out. And you know, fires are for boys, after all.
They say that. The fires are for boys, not for girls. Sort of truth moments flames. Here.
Peter ends up being assaulted by some capitalist thugs. They threaten him and want him to stop his paper. And the fires are getting worse and more numerous. Pringle learns that Gwen has a younger brother named Cager. Cager? Cager?
Cager, another name. Because rabbit and cage.
No, that's his actual name.
But I think it's a cute little thing, like, in the book. Like, it's just, his real name is Cager. Rabbit is in the cage.
I don't know.
Cage boy.
Anyway, let's go with Cager. Pringle learns that Gwen has a younger brother named Cager and that they both mourn the loss of Isaiah, Cager's twin. Isaiah died in a mining accident due to a lack of a second exit, which Pringle knows was in part due to her father's lobbying efforts to prevent regulation of that mine. Once Cager actually comes to visit, Pringle recognizes that Cager is fuckboy rabbit and Cager confesses to his involvement in the accident that killed Pringle's parents. No happy romantic ending here, just a slightly contrived twist that still focuses on labor struggle for rights. Sorry. Sorry, but
those
terrible
Chicago fires
too much.
Really still happening over there in Boston.
The Boston fires. We
the MBTA, actually, little... that's what that is. It's the MBTA fires that are just getting worse and more numerous. So history repeating itself.
We also get a fun little epilogue that tells you where everyone ended up after the events of the main story, which is a nice touch. Pringle is reunited with Marikat, her special childhood friend, and opens a school. Gideon sadly dies of tuberculosis or something at 19, and eventually, Pringle just fucks off to an island in England to paint and live out her days in solitude.
Not a bad way to end it all.
Yeah, hashtag Victorian goals.
Okay, off we go, Paris, into the rubric. And
right,
of course, we like to warm up with technical construction and layout. Again, easy one. Hopefully this is a theme year where mostly the technical construction stuff is just an easy 1 point for all these books. I know that is not going to be the case. So it already happened before with a negative one. So.
Where did this optimism come from?
I don't know. I'm trying to live my life better. I'm trying to just enjoy myself a little bit more.
But, you know, speaking of enjoying ourselves, the technical construction and layout in this book was exquisite. Totally normal. No typos. Formatting and punctuation, completely good. We even got a little epistolary style, right? It's written like a diary pages or letters sometimes.
Yeah. So I do have one small thing. This isn't a point against it. I just want us to have a moment of consideration here. And I know this isn't exactly the same thing, but... periodically, this diary is interrupted by just recipes here and there because Pringle ends up doing some housework for the Pritchards. And it'll just be like one of the entries will randomly just be a recipe for, like, I don't know, brownies or something. So I just wanted to make sure we're considering all angles here, Paris. Why does it work here? And it doesn't work to include a full restaurant menu in Splattering Yet Endearing. Like, what is the major difference, do you think?
It works here because it's relevant to Pringle's development as a character and as a person. So Pringle comes from a very privileged family. You know, she's the daughter of a mine owner, super capitalist dad. And they have a nice house. You know, she's never had to learn how to do anything. She's always had all of her basic needs met, like the washing, the cleaning, the cooking, by staff or, you know, other family members. So when, you know, she goes on this journey and they're in Chicago and they're taking care of themselves, her and Gideon, you know, she doesn't have any practical skills and she laments this. But by working for the Pritchards in their house as sort of their, like, nanny, she learns some cooking stuff. And I think that if I were learning how to cook or bake or something and I had a diary, I would totally put my recipes in there. That makes 1,000% sense to me. Great use of actually listing out recipes. Also, for kids reading this, you know, in the present day, I think it's kind of fun because these are easy recipes you might be able to try, right?
Yeah, maybe you read the book with your kid.
It gives you an activity.
And they're like, let's make the brownies that Pringle made, the Pringle brownies. Actually, Pringle brownies doesn't sound
There's no
fat.
Brownies, Chris. I don't know why you're thinking about brownies.
I'm in a snacky mood over here, okay? All right, I just want us to have that consideration, just, you know, because we shit on Spider-Man Endearing for having, like, you know, food asides like that. It's wildly different, of course. I just want to have it on the record.
No, I think that was, you know, because I had banished that experience from my mind. So I actually appreciate bringing that up because I just had to on the fly explain it and it made complete sense. So I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Nice work. Okay, so that means that's an easy one, and I guess we can just move straight on into plot.
Oh, that's like a hard one. I wish I could give it more. It's like a hard one.
So
big old
just...
strong, straight to one.
Yeah, upright, and posture is good. All right, plot and characters here then, Paris. I mean, definitely not a negative one. One, I would say, right? Like, the things
I would say one, because there's only one element of this book that threw me into a rage, and that rage was tempered by the rest of the book. So I would give it a one. The general coherence is great. It makes total sense. Things are explained well. There's only one thing, and the extremely dumb thing in this book is Fuckboy Rabbit, because It does not make any sense. Why would he be in Scranton and then also in Chicago and also the brother of the people that she's befriended and also the brother of a guy who died in a mine and also the guy who killed her parents? It's just,
a perfect confluence the writer just put everything into just Rabbit. Like, okay, he's
like
all
joke.
The stuff.
Yeah, it's real dumb. The funny thing is, like, I feel as though the writer could have done something else. They very easily could have left him in Scranton, and he didn't have to be related to the Pritchards. And all that could have happened is, like, he gets caught finally, and his picture is in the paper, and they see it in the paper in Chicago, and Gideon reacts like he did in the book, and Pringle's like, oh no. And then she finds out. Why didn't they just do that? Why did we have to contrive
it? That seems much more elegant, actually.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like it would make more sense. I mean, or it would be different if years later they ran into each other somewhere. I could buy that, right? Like, sometimes you run into people from your past, but having him show up in Chicago, be related to the family and be responsible for the death of the parent. It's just too much, man.
Yeah, it could have this could have been separate mine workers, right? Like, it puts all of the, this is a person that is involved in the labor dispute, into one person. It could have been two or three different people, so Pringle had more exposure to different types of people on that side of the story. All she really gets is, like, the Pritchards, and I guess, yeah, even Rabbit is just a Pritchard again, right? So it's like it's Gwen's maiden, whatever her maiden name would be, I suppose. But
yeah,
I think you get the point.
Yeah,
I'm trying to make.
That is the one big problem with this book, but it is, you know.
And that's not a coherence really thing. That's just like our pet peeve for having too many things being confluent in, like, one person's life.
No, that is a coherent. I mean, that is a coherence thing, because it doesn't make sense that, you know, that's like a weird. That is such a strange turn of so many events that it's not.
I suppose I put coherence and suspension of disbelief in slightly different buckets.
I was just going to say the rules following, like, yep, I think this is a great depiction of life in that period of time in American history. No notes. Totally.
Agree.
Fine.
Agree.
They even talk about how when you're on a train, you just shit onto the tracks in the bathroom, which is fucking hilarious.
I was so ready for someone to get thrown out that toilet hole onto the tracks in the train. I thought the cat was going to get thrown out there. I thought, like, the young kid was, like, the young Pritchard boy was going to get thrown out there somehow. They just talked about it a lot. Like, they really focused on the toilet hole quite a bit more than I would expect.
Yeah, I was also expecting more toilet hole shenanigans, but alas, they did not appear. Anyway, all right, let's move on to character quality. Do these characters have any depth, or are they cardboard cutouts? What's the deal here?
I mean, Pringle was maybe not relatable for me, but, like, I empathized with her quite a bit. Even though she comes from the super capitalist background, you can see her just kind of struggling from, like, reconciling what her upbringing taught her with the realities on the ground that she is now finding out. And then also reconciling that with the fact that that is what got her parents killed, and it involves someone that she had a dalliance with, which we covered before was a little bit a bridge too far for us, but just the way that was woven in, it made a believable person appear out of the page.
Yeah, really, only Fuckboy Rabbit is, like, pure plot utility. Everyone else feels pretty real to me. Even the characters that only appear briefly, I really think so many of the interactions are so realistic in this book. And another thing I really loved about it was that Gideon, Pringle's younger brother, he has Down syndrome, and the way he's presented is great. The book even pushes back against institutionalization, and it makes it really clear in a very subtle and effective way that everyone else is the problem and not Gideon when they, like,
agree,
try to make fun of him or discount him or ignore him. And it really makes the reader, it really puts the reader on Team Gideon without, I think, the reader even realizing it. And what a great gift to give to children in a book. Like, hey, kids that are different from you deserve to be respected and treated just like you yourself. And they also don't, like, harp on his difference very much. And it's so well done.
I wanted to bring up a point. Like, you and I had a little discussion about this the other night where I didn't even realize Gideon had Down syndrome for a good point, because I didn't read the ephemera after. I read, like, the little epilogue where, you know, Pringle becomes a teacher and goes off to paint and everything, but I didn't read some of the extra stuff. So, and, like, it's never really just outright said Gideon has Down syndrome, and that's why he feels, he's just presented as someone that's different, and, like, a little extra care might have to be spent on him, but that's not Gideon's fault. So again, he's just treated kindly in the way the book goes about it, and I really appreciated that, especially the fact, like, you don't have to, like, make it a point to go out and say, like, okay, he has Down syndrome, so that, like, you can, like, let your own prejudices take hold, I suppose, as a reader, if you, you know, we might have those if you're just laying it out there like that. So I like that it was just Gideon's different in this way, this is how it presents. You don't really have to label it outright. We're just, Pringle cares for her brother in that way, and there's some, you know, consternation where she has to think about, like, well, I'm going to have to take care of Gideon now. It's going to be a big part of my life, and I have to deal with that. And it's all just realistic, reasonable things to be dealing with there. I really like that.
Yeah, this is the first time in a while I've, like, really enjoyed reading a book for Terrible Book Club, and this is a children's book, and I was like, I am so invested in this. I read it in two sessions, and I was like, I'm enjoying this. This is fun.
Paris, so I get the impression that these books were marketed towards young girls, because it's often, like, a young girl who's telling the story, and there's some trappings about it. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think you're probably right, because even I read some of the Royal Diaries, and those are all women too. I think they did eventually do boys, but it does seem like it was very targeted towards girls.
In the marketing here, like, of course young boys can read stories that feature, you know, young girls and things like that, but, like, in the marketing, I'm saying, it just seems like it's supposed to be sort of like, we, you know, give your young scholar this book to read about that. And the comparison point of this to the Hardy Boys book that we discussed last episode is far and away miles different. And, like, I read a lot of the Hardy Boys books when I was a kid, because that's like, oh, you're a young boy, you get into, like, these mystery things and, like, adventures with the Hardy Boys, and just, like, the bullshit and nonsense that was happening in that book. Meanwhile, in this book, there's, like, intricate discussions of labor rights disputes and neurodivergent people. Like, no fucking wonder that most of my reading diet now is, like, fantasy and sci-fi books, and I'm like, I'm not gonna read the footnotes because I'm an idiot because I read shit like that all the time and I wasn't exposed to this stuff early, but perhaps you were, if this was, like, a childhood nostalgia thing, and maybe that's why you appreciate those footnotes and that ephemera a little bit more than me. It kind of made me self-reflect on that.
Yeah, I mean, and imagine my shock when I read a Hardy Boys book for the first time, and I'm like, this is absolute fucking drivel. Like, what? I couldn't believe that there was just zero educational content.
There was none.
There was none. Not that every book has to have that, but you want to come away from a book learning something, whether it's a fact or something about yourself or other people, right? Like, there's
even the supposed historical stuff at the Hardy Boys was incorrect, so I was dumber for it.
To be fair, though, yes, I loved this series. Yes, I think this book was pretty good. However, I do know that there are some Dear America books that have some real fucked up, like, racist shit happening. I don't remember reading a couple of the ones that were pointed out as being a problem. I think the worst one that everyone points out as being a total failure was My Heart Is on the Ground, The Diary of Nanny Little Rose, a Sioux Girl at the Carlisle Indian School, which, you know, that's a pretty rough topic. I remember reading somewhere that one was particularly bad, as was another one about a young enslaved girl. But I somehow didn't read those. And actually, the one that we read for the show today, Down the Rabbit Hole, this one came out in 2013. So this was well after I had read them. So there's like the original series, and then the reboot happened in 2010. In the original one, I mean, I read a lot of them, but I know I didn't read all of them. And then I think I read some of the royal ones. Actually, I read one of the royal ones was how I found out that that was my first brush with colonialism.
Oh, see, you're learning stuff from these things, man.
Yeah. So the initial Dear America series was so successful that they launched another related series called The Royal Diaries. And there were a ton of the, there were a few. I read one called Kalani, the People's Princess, Hawaii, 1889. And that was when I learned what the fuck happened with Hawaii. And I was like, wait, we took over a sovereign kingdom? What? I was like, excuse me?
I do remember reading about that in history class and being like, oh, we're the bad guys.
Yeah, and that one I think I read when I was like 11 or 12 or something. So I was a little older and I was like, huh, okay.
I also remember my history book being very like blasé about it. I was like, yeah, then America came in and like took over Hawaii and was like, just didn't really spend too much time on that. Just like, yeah, we just sort of colonized those people. Anyway, Civil War. Like, yeah. What? Wait, hold on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't even think I ever got that. And so I was like, oh, okay, this is bad. And then I also read the Marie Antoinette one, which I think I was probably 10 or, yeah, around the same age, maybe a little younger. And that one was my first, like, well, maybe not my first, but I just distinctly remember there's a scene where Marie Antoinette has to walk naked through a group of people, and she's a kid, and she's like, wow, this really sucks. Like, I really don't want to do this. And I was just like, yeah, dude, damn. like, that sucks. Like, sort of, you know, solidarity with, like, body, you know, baggage and, like, being a woman and being objectified. I mean, it just, these books just really had a lot of good content. That being said, I don't think I read any of the other royal ones, and I did miss some of the main ones, and I know that some of them have some terrible shit in them, so like...
I'm sorry that I picked the one that sounded the funniest because it Pringle, because I was like, ha ha, Pringle, that'll be funny, and it turns out it was very poignant, and like...
I know, I also thought because Pringle, it was going to be stupid.
Wait but, a minute, know, so they did, like, in 2013, like, Pringles have been like, that's a little...
I don't know where the name came from. That's still a mystery. I'll have to.
Author was just
Susan.
Like eating chips at the time. Just like, I don't know, Pringle. Like,
but you know, the other funny thing about Dear America is similar to the Hardy Boys. You had a bunch of different people writing books. However, they did actually print the name of the person who wrote each book on the book, so it's very distinct. Like, you know, like Susan Campbell Bartoletti. She wrote this book, and I think she wrote one or two other ones in the series, but then there's completely different people who wrote other ones. So it makes sense to me that maybe there were some that sucked and had like crappy racist shit and like bad researching, because can't all be Susan, I guess. You know, in any case, yeah, I think this series is a pretty solid one in a lot of ways. Let's talk about moment to moment. Let's talk about the experience of actually reading it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, another one on this scale because it was, again, the characters are interesting to follow, despite being written, or not even despite being written, like, it's written in semi-period style, you could say, and it feels good in that respect. There's a lot of interesting descriptions, and some of Pringle's internal monologue has a couple of like really nice descriptions about how she's feeling. And I get that little, like, we talk about this all the time, or at least I talk about it all the time. Two neurons meeting in a new fun way when you're describing something. That definitely happened a couple of times throughout this.
Yeah. I think for prose quality and dialogue, I totally agree. Everything flows so well. There were even points where I was like, ooh, that's a good line. I'll just read a few passages so people know what we're talking about. All right. I'm going to read a passage called The Things I Remember. is from, all right, Monday, September 4th, 1871. I remember the rain pelted Miss Westcott's window. I remember the rivulets of water streamed down the glass, making the trees, the outbuildings, the grass appear wavy. I remember Uncle Edward's wet shoes squeaked against the wooden floor as he shifted his weight. I remember his trousers were soaked from the knees down. I remember he reeked of Hoyt's cologne, a scent that Mother described as an attempt at a garden or a harvest or pickling. A gentleman should be seen and not smelled. I remember his voice crackled like static air before a storm. Pringle, I have terrible news. Yet I plunged ahead unafraid.
I'm sorry, that's a little funny.
I was Alice,
we ran out of pizza.
Chasing the white rabbit. It's Gideon, I said. I have been prepared to lose my brother ever since he was a baby. Doctors say children like Gideon don't live to adulthood. That's why my first thought was Gideon. That's why my second thought was, please, let it be Gideon. Uncle Edward's words crashed like thunder. It's not Gideon. I'm so sorry, Pringle. It's your parents. My heart, I gripped the back of an upholstered chair to steady myself. Are they sick? I knew the answer from his stricken look. He circled my shoulders clumsily with his arm and steered me toward the divan. There's no delicate way to put this. Come, sit. I rooted my feet to the carpet. Then don't put it delicately. My dear niece, said Uncle Edward, taking my hand. There's been a terrible accident. Carriage accident. Your mother and father are dead. Dead? The words surged through me like lightning. I yanked my hand from my uncle's, lest his hand singe mine. When? Yesterday. I came as quickly as I could. Impossible! I laughed as I reached in my uniform pocket for my parents' letters. The joke was on my uncle. How can they be dead, see? Here are their letters. They arrived yesterday. I knew the illogic even as I said it. My laugh sounded somewhere outside myself. Just thought that whole scene was fantastic. Like,
yeah.
You get so much characterization and detail, but it's not overwrought. You get, you know, this troubled inner monologue of Pringle being like, you know, I love my brother, but I love my parents more, right? Like, and that's like a horrible,
like a little dark,
horrible to have those. Yeah, but we all have feelings like that, I think, especially as a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, you don't want to hear that your parents died, because that's your tether to existence. You know, you don't want to hear your sibling died either, but if they die, at least you're still fine, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and like, you know, her feet being rooted to the floor, there's like the little bit of defiance there. Just like, no, I can handle it here. Like, gives you a little bit of insight into who Pringle is at that young age.
Yeah. And I even really like, you know, so many passages in books I've read will say something like, oh, he yelled like lightning or sounded like thunder. But she carries the metaphor, you know, she takes the mood outside, which is a rainstorm, thunderstorm anyway, and brings it in and carries it through, right? We get the crackle like static air. We get the thunder. We get, you know, we get all these different things that pull that together, and it works really well. And this quality carries through this whole book. I found this book like surprisingly enchanting as a 34-year-old woman. Okay. I'm gonna read a few more passages for more examples of like dialogue.
Take it away.
And okay. Monday, September 11th, 1871. The Pritchards live in a cramped but tasteful two-story frame house on Sherman Street on the south side of Chicago. The furniture is sturdy but spare. There's not one framed photograph or ornamental plate or knick-knack or Rogers Group statue. Peter works as an organizer for the National Labor Union. He publishes a small, single-sheet labor newspaper, which he started with a small inheritance from his father. What father would say to that? Ugh, never mind, I know. This morning, we breakfasted on tea and toast and baked beans, dark with molasses. I sat Gideon down for his morning lessons, and Adam and Lucy joined in. Lucy has a quick mind. She's just 4, but she recognizes upper and lowercase letters and can sound out simple words. After lessons, I read to the children, just as Mother did for Gideon and me, so that we would learn to read dramatically, with great feeling. I read A Mad Tea Party from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, using different voices for the different characters, the way Mother always did. That made the children laugh. A sad look came to Gwen's eyes, and I could tell she was someplace far away. I let her visit there and continued reading to the children. The last two lines are so good. Like, I always see in books where people say, oh, their eyes were far away, and it kind of like, it just really needs that little tie up, and she really ties it up beautifully there. I let her visit there and continued reading to the children. Just so simple a thing.
Right? But like,
again,
there's no...
We read so much garbage, everyone. Exactly. And honestly, Chris and I also, as you know, you now know, we also read other things not for the show.
Turns
and
out,
even
yeah,
then,
I can also read nice books sometimes.
But even then, I feel like I'm always striving for good writing. It's so hard to find out there. You know, a good word is just hard to find for a woman my age.
There's not enough out there.
No.
Please give me the nice, tasty words.
All right, I'll do one more. This is Wednesday, September 12th into Wednesday, September 13th. Okay. Peter brought home a copy of the Chicago Tribune. I paged through the newspaper, looking over the advertisements, hoping to find employment. Here are the jobs I found. Wanted, a girl to wash bottles and fill them up at number 16 Franklin Street, basement at 9 o'clock. Don't take that one.
Yeah, maybe not that one. In particular, avoid that listing.
Wanted, a good smart girl to cook. Apply at 99 North Wells Street. Wanted, laundry girl at restaurant, 77 Dearborn Street. Wanted, a good chambermaid, one that can wait on table. Apply before 10 at 124 South State Street.
I mean, when the table shows up, I suppose, like, you can go home, but you gotta really wait for the table.
Gotta wait on that table. The sad truth is that I have no skills. Someone else has always washed my dishes, cooked my meals, polished my furniture, stitched and sewed and ironed and washed my clothes, but this advertisement looks promising. Wanted, a young girl, 12 to 15 years of age, to assist in the care of a child. Howard House, Corner, State, and Van Buren. I have asked Peter and Gwen for a letter of reference. Peter promised to think it over and give me an answer in the morning. A hot, sticky breeze is blowing through the window. I have bundled up Mother's cape for a pillow. I can hear Peter's and Gwen's murmurs. They're probably listing all the reasons they cannot provide me with a reference. I have no skills. I have no true work experience. Gwen has only known me for 10 days. They do not know my background. My great-grandmother Annabella came to America at 14 with only a silver needle and thimble and the scarlet cape, but her spinning and weaving and sewing skills allowed her to make her way in a new country. I feel stupid and useless. What good did my studies at Marywood do? Damn.
Right?
Like, fuck yeah. Like, yeah, it do make you wonder when you go and get a bachelor's degree and then come out of it and be like, I don't know, I can't fucking do anything. What does it matter? Sorry, I have one more. Immediately following, this is Wednesday, September 13th. At breakfast, Peter tapped his teacup with a butter knife. Children, I have an announcement. Gwen cleared her throat and corrected Peter, saying, we. We have an announcement, said Peter. If Pringle is willing, we'd like her to stay on as your nursemaid. Gwen lifted her splinted arm. Heaven knows, I need a nursemaid. Adam and Lucy shouted, yes! Sally banged her cup. And so the Pritchards have taken pity on Gideon and me. In exchange for room and board, I will work as a nursemaid for Adam, Lucy, and Sally. Imagine that, Pringle Rose, a nursemaid. Perhaps I'll stay until I'm somebody else. Another great little line.
Yeah. Great at the little wrap-ups at the end of paragraphs, right? Just like a way to get you to focus it back in on the type of person Pringle is. What type of flavor is she? Is she pizza? Is she the sour cream and onion, right? Like,
yeah. So, all right. So I think that's well enough for dialogue and prose and everything.
I agree.
Hard one on that. Great.
Hard
great
one
section.
On that one. And like, you know, this brings us to our next section, Tereblo's Presence, which usually we have a lot of ha-ha funny stuff happening here, but there ain't nothing to talk about here, man. Like, it was totally fine. Like, the Dark Lord was not present here at all. Maybe a
no,
little
he
bit
sent,
with Rabbit.
He sent his agent, Fuckboy Rabbit.
Just
he's
a little.
Tereblo's agent.
Just to remind us who we belong to.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, no. There was no please helping. There was no ha, no ki. I mean, the huh was just a fuckboy rabbit. No chaos. But honestly, we had the opposite happen, where instead of we were like, oh, please help, what's happening? We were like, oh, God, this is so good.
Like, I kept having the reaction of, like, I can't believe I was reading the Hardy Boys when I had stuff like this possibly available to me. And I was probably just like, I don't even remember any of these books appearing in front of my eyes as a child. And I'm betting, like, maybe when I was in a bookstore or something, my eyes just, like, glazed over. And it's like, because girl on cover, not for me. Hardy Boys. Like, right? Like, it could have been as simple as that.
Probably, like, I mean, as a child, I lived not even two blocks from the library branch local to me. And so I was always at the library, like, when I was really, really little, because it was so close. And I just remember there was a display of these one day, and then I just took out as many as I could, and I just kept coming back and reading them. I don't know about you, Demi. Did you go to the library as a kid? Or
here and there, yeah, definitely more than I do now, which is a crying shame, like a really crying shame, and I should be using the library more often, or just the Lee
Yo, especially app. especially the BPL, the main branch. Do you know they have a bar in there? They've got a tea
Whoa,
room.
Whoa, wait, hold on. There's a bar in the library?
Yes, you can go to the Boston Public Library and have a fucking cocktail. And you can go and have high tea there, too. Like, little snacks and tea.
I'm doing that all the time with Rebecca now.
Yeah, like, I know. I was telling Tris the other day, I was like, why have we not had high tea at the fucking library? And she was like, I don't know. I was like, and
we're coming too, Paris. We're coming along, too. I'm sorry. I've just self-invited us.
Yeah, we're now having a big old trip to the BPL to take in all their weird stuff. And it's a really beautiful library. But Boston Public Library has many branches. You probably have one closer to you than the big old branch downtown. But oh, yeah, the Fields Corner one. Didn't that one get redone recently?
A little bit.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I mean, this was just such a breath of fresh, crisp morning air after Hardy Boys.
Yeah, like, another hard one here. Like, and honestly, I think we're about to 5 out of 5 this, because unless you have anything else to add, we can move on to Should This Exist?
No, we can move right along.
And yes, another one, and yes, that this should exist, because, again, coming back to my own personal experience of having read this now as a 34-year-old man, when I could have been reading this at a younger age and getting something out of it. So again, adventures of getting conked on the head by goons and how to slip into armor noiselessly with the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, that's rough. This absolutely should exist. I think readers of this genre, like historical fiction, would enjoy it. Honestly, whether you're a kid or not, this was great. And I'm 34, so
kind of short, easy to do. So like, it's not like a big dense thing either.
And there's like a nice little short appendix at the back that goes through all the historical stuff, which I really appreciate. As you know, I've mentioned other episodes, and it didn't. You know, it wasn't like a lot of extra reading. It was like, hey, this is like about the railroad accident, because there is a train crash in the story. And they're like, yeah, it's based on this actual train crash that happened. It's totally believable that, you know, this could have happened because, you know, American railroads, not the safest at that point in time. It talks about, you know, the treatment of children with Down syndrome at that time. And it talks about the importance of diaries for young girls in America at that time. So it just like hits on some of the stuff and is like, oh, by the way, here's a historic background for this. You know, it's like a paragraph or two. Really great stuff. And again, I know that some books in this series are not nearly as good as this one. So I suppose maybe do a little research, but honestly, give these to kids in your life. Like, if you got kids that are looking for good stuff to read, I think these are a really good opportunity.
Some stuff that like enlarge the brain a little bit, make some more folds in there or whatever.
Yeah.
Crumple the brain up real good.
Do we feel as if the author's goal was met? Yes, absolutely.
100%.
Just fucking rabbit, get out of here. That's the only thing I have to say about that. Did it add anything new, interesting, or novel? Yes. I think kids really need this sort of thing because
agree.
Not only are they like learning something, but it helps them grapple with topics that they may not have encountered yet in life in a safe environment, you know, AKA there's no judgment coming from parents or peers, right? Mm-hmm. In addition to the historical facts, like I was mentioning, you know, with others in the series I had read where I was like, huh, colonialism, you know, and like just having to sit with that and read this story and be like, wow, that's horrible. You know, or when I was reading about Marie Antoinette and being like, bodily autonomy, like being forced to walk naked in front of other people. Yeah, that's a rough thing. Let me sit here and think about it. You know, sometimes it is good for kids to encounter hard subjects on their own in a book, so they can sort of stew on it, and then it'll prepare them for having a more serious discussion about it or learning about things like that later. So, yeah. Did this book take something from us? No, absolutely not.
It gave me something. Yeah. It gave me the realization of what I could have been reading as a young kid. And I wasn't reading all Hardy Boys all the time as a kid either. But, you know, again, the fact that I didn't see more of this when I was younger, is it feels like a missed opportunity, which might feel like it took something from me. But no, that's a gift of like, oh, if there's a younger person in my life who was like wants to read some stuff that might educate them. I mean, no young kid is like, please give me learny books. I think some are, but you know, if they're into historical stuff, I would definitely point them in this direction.
You know, or if you're an educator and you need something to teach about a certain period, I think these are great. Of course, you know, like I said, they're all written by different authors. Apparently some of them not so great, but many of these I think could be really great teaching tools that are actually kind of engaging. Yeah, it really sucks that you fell victim to like gendered marketing, because I also feel like maybe these were marketed towards the more femme side of things. I guess because they're diaries, and diaries have always, I don't know, I get the sense that diaries are very gendered, right?
Yes.
And that it's very much like a girl's thing to have a diary. And
well,
so
boys
a boy,
have a journal and girls have a diary.
Oh, God.
That's the difference. Fires are for boys, and I guess, I don't know, water is for, like, their water element? Yeah. Oh, how does that work? The pools are for girls. You can't have fires in the Midlands, because that's where all the boys with the boy magic live. I don't know how that works. I think I almost caused you to
just fucking choke to death on tea because of that. I was not expecting you to talk about the Midlands. Oh, God.
All right, can we fix it, Paris?
I mean, I think I already explained, just, you know, leave Fuckboy Rabbit in Scranton and have Pringle figure out that he killed her parents when he's, like, caught and in a photo in a newspaper, and then her brother sees it and is like, oh, no. You know, don't have him related to the fucking Pritchards, and certainly don't have him show up at the house and reunite with Pringle two paragraphs before she finds out that he killed her parents.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I forgot to bring this up. There was like a whiff of gayness in this book that never really got its due. You know, the mom, Pringle's talking about her mom and her mom's special friend, Beatrice Ringwald, who is the woman they go to in Chicago who gets committed. And, you know, the way she's described, it's like, well, she never wanted to get, she thought marriage wasn't for her, and she wore pants and like woke up late. And I was like, she just gay? Are you just,
yeah, famously
gay
trait of waking up late? Wait, what are you talking about?
No, I know, but there was just this like special lady friend stuff between the mom and Beatrice, and then between Pringle and Maricat, her friend. And they just kept saying like special lady friend, and back then in Victorian times, that usually meant it was like the girl you crushed on. It was like a thing that happened usually when they were in college, so maybe not this age, but she's at a prep school, you know. I was just like,
it's real borderline in my book. Like, it could also just be a special lady for, you know.
Why is it gonna be special? Why can't it just be your friend?
Best friend. That's just how they say best friend.
No, see, this time period, I feel like that has a specific connotation that's,
yeah,
like,
you're probably
a little gay.
Right.
A little gay.
Sure. And, you know, like, maybe
Antiques
special means
freaks
something.
Back me up on this.
Get in here, guys.
So, I don't know. I was just like, I wonder what the deal with that was, and kind of was like, I'm sure they didn't spin it out because it was, I don't know, 2011 or something when this was written.
Mm-hmm.
In any case,
that was it. I got the same points there, really. And again, I just harping more on how much different this was from the Hardy Boys thing. Just really, you know, again, a lot of self-reflection happening there for me. I wouldn't fix anything else aside from what you mentioned here. So I guess thank you for the fact that these kinds of books do exist for younger readers. There is some good out there to be recommending to them. That's pretty much all I have to say here, Paris. So why don't we thank the patrons?
Oh, we forgot to say that there was a cat in this called Mozi, named after Mozart, and the cat was a pretty solid character. Yeah, that was it. Good okay. Cat sidekick.
Good point. Good cat sidekick. Sidebar, there is cat. All right, well, let's thank the patrons here. Thank you to our bad bookworms, Emily, Ben, Bleach Black Cat, Renee, Scott H., Donnie, Anya, like Horace, Jakob, Jared, and Will. Our exacting editors, Rudy Bobooty, The Ugly One, Emmy, Harry Seven, Funny Robot with Antennas, David, Martin, Kieran, Elliot, D, and Greg. The Loathsome Librarians of the Void, The Taco Eating Unicorn, Robin, Beast with the Least, Austin, Patricia, Veronica, Luchek, Stenia, and Arant. The pesky publishers, Julius the Nice Dragon, Miles May, and Fred Jones. And our Ko-fi donor, Kiwi Thing. Thank you for supporting the show. Is anyone willing to become an arch-archivist this year? What monstrous, heinous, large, humongous, big, fat, thick tome are you going to force us to read? I kept adding more adjectives because I keep saying heinous, monstrous tome for all the things I keep trying to add.
How about a tome with pages that clap? Does that work?
<It doesn't. laughs> I was trying to sneak past the guards, but the clapping of the pages of this huge, thick tome alerted them.
In case if you do have those recommendations, get them over here, because by the time you hear this, we're probably already full up on the schedule, honestly.
Yeah, we're recording this in early December, actually, of 2023, and this is coming out like in March or something. So this
April?
We're getting ahead of the game.
It's coming out April.
Yeah. Oh, April. Okay. Well, yeah, we're really ahead of the
game.
March. Here, so
March and April, both are correct.
Yeah. Maybe I'll make another Patreon post in current time, but past time for those that are listening here. That just try to sneak it in where you can.
Yeah.
All right, Paris. Well, I'm off to take a train to my new life in dry, dry Chicago. I hope nothing bad happens.
Yeah. Wow. Did you know that Chicago was having 600 plus fires a year and they were still making their sidewalks out of wood? Real story.
That's why you outlaw fire, Paris. You don't change the wood or anything. You outlaw fire. That's how you do
well,
it. See?
The problem.
Terry
well,
Goodkind
yeah,
knew it was up.
You can't outlaw dryness in the weather. So
watch me. Watch me, Paris.
Elect Chris for 2024 mayor
That's
of Chicago.
Right. No fires whatsoever. I'm making it illegal. All right. See you later, Paris.
How will we cook or keep warm, Chris?
Thank you for listening to another episode of Terrible Book Club. Terrible Book Club is an independent podcast produced by your hosts, Paris and Chris. Sound design and audio editing by Chris, with sound effects and music by Epidemic Sound and sometimes also Chris. Our theme song is Kiss by Yearn, which is, you guessed it, actually, also Chris. You can find more of his soothing synthy sounds on Bandcamp at yearn.bandcamp.com. Do you want us to review a book of your choice on the show? Do you want access to some extra audiovisual weirdness? If so, become a patron at patreon.com/terriblebookclub. If you'd like to send us a one-time tip instead, you can do that at ko-fi.com/terriblebookclub. You can also support TBC for free by sharing the show on social media, following our accounts on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Goodreads, telling your friends about your favorite episode, or by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or anywhere else on the internet. To send us book recommendations or your adorable pet photos, send an email to terriblebookclub@gmail.com.